Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to the Valor Hour, a look into everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. Thanks for joining us, and please remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher. Also, a huge thanks to our tremendous sponsor, Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl, for supporting our cause each and every week. This week, we recap UFC on Fox 28, Emmett versus Stevens, preview this weekend's Bellator Monster Energy Series in Atlanta, and discuss the landscape of amateur boxing in our state. And as always, Valor Fights President Tim Loy will address your questions during the Valor Hour Q&A segment. I'm Casey Oxendine, and I am joined by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, lots of discussion here with topics that hit home this week.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I'm gonna get into some good juicy conversation for sure.
Yeah, now we're also joined by a few guests this week. I call them the usual suspects. It's Alan Poole. Alan, how you doing?
Man, doing great. Great to be here. Great to be back.
Awesome. Mark Laws.
Couldn't be better, brother.
Okay, and Sawyer Rich.
Doing well as always. Thanks, man.
All right. Well, without further ado, let's get on into the news. Last week was huge for MMA fans of the southeastern U.S. as several noted stars of the region were featured as part of UFC on Fox 28. It was a night to remember with notable knockouts and submissions. And a very exciting night of action overall. It went down at the Amway Center in Orlando, Florida, and featured a huge main event. Jeremy Stevens versus Josh Emmett. Jeremy Stevens, he takes the TKO finish, but not without controversy, Tim.
Yeah, that was kind of the talk afterward was the knee that people were worried, I guess, landed while he was down. There was a lot of talk about some misinterpretation of rules and whatnot. But at the end of the day, they did not rule it a foul, and Emmett got he got waylaid. But he was looking good to that point. I mean, he dropped Stevens in the first. I mean, yeah, I don't feel like Emmett's stock really drops a lot or anything there. But you know, Stevens is kind of hot. Stevens has kind of become a pretty viable, like, contender all of a sudden.
Yeah. Mark, did you watch this big main event?
I sure did, brother.
What do you think?
Man, the knee is fuck, man. It go either way. It didn't look like it moved his head backwards. I'm a big physics guy. And with Cormier, to a degree, I agree, but Jesus, man, you can't do that shit. You can't do it. Absolutely not.
I can't.
That was an illegal shot by anybody's. It's just not legal.
Alan, did I hear you interceding there? Do you have something to say on the topic?
Didn't the rules just change on this? Because now I feel like I'm completely lost. They used to know what the rules were when a knee is down or the hand was down. You know, you couldn't throw the knee to the face. Now I don't know. It's just what does anybody know what the real rule is?
I think that there's a difference between if I'm trying to play the rules, like trying to drop my knee so that I don't, you know, nobody can kick me in the face, and falling. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I think it's a completely different situation. I have to say, I sort of look at it from a coach's perspective. Like, if the fighter that had inflicted the foul was my fighter, I would be warning him, hey, man, you've got this in the bag. Don't throw it away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because most of the time, they're not going to back things up, and you're not going to lose it. You know, and that was the case here. But they can take it right out of your mouth, man. You can have it signed, sealed, and delivered, and lose it all. And I think that's where, you know, because essentially those shots are when the fighters are most vulnerable. That's the most dangerous time they can get hit, is when they're, you know, on their way out. So I think that, you know, they definitely need to watch, you know, if you're a fighter, you definitely need to watch those fouls.
But if it connected, would it have been illegal? Like, if it had hit him? You know what I mean? Like if it was like if we were watching it and it looked definitively like it hit him, because it looked like it missed him. But what if it just smashed him right in the nose? Would then it would have been a foul, right?
I think anytime you've got a knee down, you can't do that, right?
Right, undoubtedly.
Yeah,
undoubtedly.
He definitely had a knee down, you know.
Yeah, and so, you know, it goes on. But that being said, Jeremy Stephens, he moves on. He advances. He looked great. And he's really, you know, an exciting fighter to watch and just an animal. So I look for big things out of him. Like you said, Josh Emmett will definitely be back and be strong again. Moving on, the co-main event, that was a barn burner as well. Jessica Andrade takes a unanimous decision over Tisha Torres in a very, I won't say back and forth battle, but it was very competitive, Tim.
Yeah, that was a fun fight. You know, it was one of those where, you know, I don't think that Torres lost a whole lot of stock. She really fought hard and was just game and scrappy the whole time. But Andrade is just so burly and beastly and strong, and she was just able to just throw her around. But you know what? Tisha was constantly attacking, and I bet Andrade, and so I was. You know, I needed her to win, but it wasn't without trepidation the whole time. I was like still just, you know, worried because, you know, Tisha was so active.
Well, and two out of three of the judges picked Tisha in the first round, you know, mm-hmm. So she did win that first round on the cards. Sawyer Rich, what did you think of this WMMA action here in the co-main event?
I mean, it was an awesome fight as expected. I was on, the picks panel, and I picked Tisha Torres because I thought it was a smart pick. I knew it was going to be a really tough fight, and I knew that, you know, she was the underdog, so I thought it was a good play for me. Unfortunately, she came up short, but, I mean, it wasn't embarrassing by any means. I think she looked good, as always. I mean, it was a close fight. She just kind of got, as Tim just said, it was just too much for her to handle. You know what I mean? It was nothing that she was doing wrong. It was just she couldn't hang with that, and it was an awesome fight. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, moving on, this is the part I've dreaded. Of course, everyone knows I'm a huge fan of Ovince St. Preux, as we all are here in the southeastern part of the U.S. and in East Tennessee. You know, it was this fight, you know, it was Ovince versus Aleir Latifi. It was billed as it was going to be a great fight, and it was. It was, you know, it was always heat and a lot of action when Ovince is involved. Aleir Latifi catches him, ends up in the standing guillotine, and finishes Ovince with that. And moves on, advances on to 14-5. Tim, talk about the matchup.
Man, very disappointing to see. I really thought that Ovince was a real heavy favorite to win that one, just stylistically. And I thought that really the only shot was a big haymaker, maybe dropping him, and he got hit with one and was hurt. And Latifi pounced on it, you know. He fought. He did it all right, you know. And so, things like that happen. It certainly hurts Ovince's momentum, where he had strung together three good wins in a row, and they were talking about a title, real soon. Now it'll be Latifi that's in that conversation, and Ovince is going to have to work his way back up. But you know, I'm sure they'll pick him up at KMA and get him ready, and hopefully get him back out there quickly.
Yeah, Mark, you watched the fight. What were you thinking there in that matchup? And what do you think, as far as Aleir Latifi, what do you think about, you know, where he goes next?
Man, I'm with Tim on this. Who knew he could strangle motherfuckers with a standing guillotine, somebody who's 7 inches taller than him? You know, that's crazy. But, you know, he did it, and again, obviously advances on, and Vince has got to just fight back, man. Vince has got to come back in the 205 division, and, you know, that's a tough loss for Vince, for sure.
Undoubtedly. So looking back down the card, you know, Max Griffin with a big decision victory over Mike Perry. That was a big one. Brian Kelleher, he goes over Henan Burrell decision as well. Marianne Renault, she defeats Sarah McMahon via triangle choke. Somewhat surprising there. I mean, to get a submission over Sarah McMahon, a huge win there for her. And then Angela Hill with the unanimous decision victory. Tim, what stands out to you the most here on the undercard?
That was a bit of an upset seeing Renault beat McMahon there. I've lost money there again. That was, McMahon won the first round, but Renault – you got a good gas tank started landing, good shot standing in the second round, and finally got that submission there. You know, so that one that stood out. You know, also Sam Alvey, he got a win at 205, like real early on the undercard. So you know, those are kind of the that Alan Jouban and Saunders fight was awesome. That you know, that was fun. They beat the shit out of each other, and then finally Jouban put him down. And there people were you know, they were friends. They're both 10th Planet guys, so there was some talk of they would really let it go when they did. You know.
Now, Jeff, real quick, what was your take on the undercard, the overall card as a whole?
You know, aside from the fact that I totally stunk up my picks, you know, the Kelleher fight, really enjoyed that. I did pick that one right, and I picked it for the reasons, you know, how it did turn out. I just, you know, Kelleher, I think, is just a great up-and-coming guy, fighter. Burrell just seems to be on that downside of his career now. For me, the match that stood out was Andrade's just complete domination. Just, she's a bulldozer. I mean, she's nasty. And, you know, I picked her, but I did not expect that it was going to be that kind of fight. You know, she's intense, and I definitely see her back in that title picture once things clear up. Here in the near future. You know, I hated to see Ovince, you know, take that loss, but, I mean, wow, got to give it to Latifi. He had a game plan, he stuck with it, and he shocked our panel, that's for sure. Stevens in the main event, you know, I wasn't too upset about, you know, the controversial, you know, knee. You know, watching it real time, maybe I took like a second glance at it, like, whoa, was that what I think I just saw? But, you know, after the slow-mos, I think it was legit. I don't think there was any real controversy there. I think the elbows maybe were a lot more controversial than the knee to me. But again, you start playing that game moving ahead. I mean, you're swinging, you're throwing bows. You start moving that head around. You know, you don't, that guy doesn't know where they're going. You're moving your head into them. So I wasn't real upset about it. All in all, I think it was a much better card than what I expected it to be as a whole. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the card very much.
Undoubtedly. Now, you mentioned the picks panel. And so funny you should mention that, because Tim is, I'm going to send it over to him. He's got the current standings for our picks, and they're up to date. And, you know, it's going to be a really sad, sad day for whoever loses, and a great day, a grand day for whoever takes this thing. Tim, I'm going to send it over to you and let you give the current standings.
Yeah, we're at, you know, this is our the second event of four in this quarter for our award, which is presented by Tennessee Top Roller. And so we've got two more events to go. So we've got the Strike Fest card, which we'll be doing picks next week, and then the big Valor 48 card. So all is not lost. There's lots of fights to make up some ground here. But going into this week, you know, after the picks this week, no one had a great week. The best record was shared by Alan and Roy, and Alan can thank Dustin Ortiz for his 4-4 evening, which is still nothing to write home about. But it leads on the week 4-4. Jeff Hobbs 3-5, and then Sawyer Rich, Mark Walls, and Chandler Cole all finish 2-6, and so. Cumulatively, it really kind of bunches things up at the top. The top four guys are really close now. Chandler Cole and Alan Poole tied for first place at 14-10. Jeff Hobbs and Roy Sanders both one game back, or one fight back, we'll say, at 13-11. And then Sawyer Rich is 10-14. He's four back, and Mark Laws, bringing up the rear at 8-16. Mark's going to have to really turn it on here these last two to make up some ground, but the top four guys are all right there with each other.
All right, well, there you have it, and it's going to continue to get better. That being said, UFC on Fox is a done deal, but UFC 222 returns to pay-per-view this Saturday night. And of course, it resonates from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, and features a stellar WMMA main event in Chris Justino. We know her as Cyborg, and she takes on Yana Kunitskaya, who is the current Invicta champion, current Invicta bantamweight champion, if I'm correct.
Yeah, she is the Invicta champion, but man, it's still going to be a real tough action, I think.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Guys, what are you looking forward to the most? Sorry, I'm going to go to you first. What do you think about this matchup? Do you think that Yana has a chance against Cyborg?
To be completely honest, no, not really. I hate to say that. I mean, obviously, you know, she's very tough. She's going to bring it very, very game. It's just Cyborg is just too much. She you know, hits too hard. She moves too well. She's too technical. And all in all, just too mean, really. And I think she's going to tear her up like everybody else. I mean, that's just it.
Gotcha. Well, moving on down the list, the co-main event, it's going to be one to remember as well. Frankie Edgar taking on Brian Ortega. That's going to be a lot of action there. Excited for that one, Tim. How does this break down for you?
Man, that's the fight. That's the main event. You know, without that, they wouldn't get my money on this one. But that they'll get my money. We'll be coming in on two wheels from Bellator that night. But we're gonna get home in time to see that. That's the fight. You know, T City and Frankie Edgar. I'm rooting for T City. I hope he pulls it off. It's gonna be tough. You know, but man, he always finds a way.
Undoubtedly, Mark. What do you think about this one?
I'm going with Frankie Edgar on this one, brother.
Frankie Edgar, what do you think about the matchup? How do you think he takes it? What are your thoughts?
I think he drags it very deep into the fight in Frankie Edgar's style. I think his boxing will reign supreme. I think his coach is better, and I feel like he drags it deep and takes him into his.
Undoubtedly. All right. Well, of course, it's going to be a stellar card from top to bottom. But these two fights really cap off a big night of action. It's UFC 222 live on pay-per-view. And that goes down this Saturday night, March 3rd at 10 p.m. Now, with that being said, that does it for the news, which means we are headed into this week's Valor Hour Q&A segment. Tim, are you ready for this?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, let's get on to the questions then. Tim, first question. When do you think we'll see John Jones back in the octagon, if ever? On the regional scene, have you ever seen a smaller scale situation like John's where a really talented guy just can't seem to get out of his own way?
Oh, man. I don't know that we're going to see him back in the octagon anytime soon. Maybe ever. It's just a big mess. Yes, I don't know any names. So, yeah, there's been a few guys on the regional scene that really had the potential to, you know, to certainly be in the UFC, even competitive in the UFC, but just never could, you know, couldn't get out of their own way. You know, they, for whatever reason, if it was a couple hundred bucks or whatever in there, they couldn't, they just didn't pull the trigger to stay active or got in trouble, whatever. You know, I've seen several. I mean, there's been guys that could probably be further than some of the guys that are from this area are now.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah, you definitely, that's the one thing about a fighter is that, you know, you can have all of the tools, but you definitely have to enact them and make them work. Question number two, Tim, are you ordering UFC 222 on Saturday?
Yes, we will order it. They will get my money.
Okay. Well, in honor of Cyborg defending her UFC title for a second time on Saturday, who are your top three all-time women's MMA fighters?
Oh, shit. Okay, let's go, man. I think they're all competing now. You know, I think it's you got to go Cyborg, Joanna, and the number three is tough. I mean, maybe Holly Holm. Oh no, we'll go with Nunez.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there anybody that's better that I've left out that's retired? I mean, Carano doesn't beat any of these girls. Rousey washed out. I mean, who else is there?
I think that's it. I mean, you know, you could go back to the old school. You could even bring up Tara LaRosa, who was, you know, had a 35-plus win streak going there from like 2001 until like 2009, you know. So undefeated in that period of time. For that generation, when before sort of the UFC came about, she was on top, you know, and she was unbeatable per se, you know, and when Bo Dog was around and all that. So if you want to go classic, you know, you could always bring her up. But as far as this generation, man, those are three solid talents. That being said, let's move on to our next question. Tim, are there any extra challenges in promoting WMMA bouts than men's matches? Has Valor Fights always supported women's MMA?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've supported women's MMA since the rib. I mean, we've always loved, you know, to showcase females in big spots. And I don't think there's that. And the only challenge is that you've got a more shallow pool to pull talent from. That's a challenge. But as far as like, you know, working with them, negotiating with them, dealing with them, no. If anything, most of the females that we've booked are much more organized and, you know, like, you know, on time and whatnot.
Yeah, the only thing, and I mean, this is just when you're actually going through, and this, it really doesn't affect us, but it affects the commissions and so forth, but the pregnancy test. And I think there have been a couple of instances where they've come up positive, you know, during the event. So I think that's the only thing that is actually literally literally different. That said, you know, our last year, man, we, you know, of course, we headlined between Valor and then the Bar Battles events, headlined twice and had several co-main events. And I don't, you know, you've not announced it yet, but I think in the Shed, you're looking forward to a main event there with WMMA fighters, which is going to be interesting.
Absolutely. And our co-main event in Nashville.
Yes, undoubtedly. Okay, well, moving on. What do you think about is a bout that might fly under the radar that could steal the show at Valor 48?
Okay, that's a good one. You know, I'd say, you know, just pulling it up real quick in front of me just so I've got it. I'd say one that could steal the show that probably isn't going to necessarily get a whole lot of shine in advance. Could be Cromwell Stewart and Ian Lawler. I think stylistically, you know, sometimes those guys like to grind a little bit, but I don't think either is going to get an easy takedown, and they're both going to have to work on the feet. I think that one. And on the amateur side, I think that Timmy Eisenbron and Nick Jewell could be a fun one, because, you know, Eisenbron's just a machine, and Jewell, you know, no one's going to tell him he's not the best in the damn world. You know, so he comes out there with a good head of steam, and he gets better every time, and he's going to throw lots of crazy head kicks. And so that's one that I think it'll be fun as well. Just kind of flying under the radar. But, you know, there's lots more good shit.
Undoubtedly. Well, that does it for this week's edition of the Valor Hour Q&A segment. With that being said, it is time to head into our lineup of guests this week. They are great. We are joined by David Oblas, CEO of NFC Fight Night, based in Atlanta, Georgia. He and NFC are a major component of a huge Bellator MMA Monster Energy event, which goes down this Saturday night, March 3rd at 4 p.m. and resonates from the Georgia World Congress Center. David, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, it makes 2 weeks in a row, man. So glad to have you back. We're going to talk a little bit about this card coming up this weekend in Atlanta. Before we dive into the card a little bit, talk a little bit about the experience working with Bellator leading up to this thing. You know, we did something similar last year, and I really enjoyed it personally, just seeing the inner workings of a larger promotion like that. It's so compartmentalized, you know, and really kind of like a dream to be able to see the components work like that. So just talk a little bit about, you know, the process leading up.
Yeah, man, I've actually wanted to work for Bellator for a while, and I've been jealous since I saw you guys did them last year at NASCAR. Trust me, that got my blood boiling. I was like, damn, Valor got with Bellator at NASCAR, and I haven't done anything with them. So it's definitely been fun. I'm trying to catch up to you guys. But, yeah, it's this Saturday, 4 p.m., a completely free show at the George Orr Congress Center. You just bring an empty monster can down for them to recycle. And you're in free, and the goal is to get as many Atlanta guys on the card. And got, I think, 6 out of 8 from Atlanta, and one from South Georgia and Savannah, and another one from Auburn, Alabama. So it's definitely all eight guys local. So I was excited about that.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And it's certainly an A-list of Atlanta-based stars. And we've seen a lot of those guys in the ranks of NFC before. You know, let's just kind of go down the list of it. In the featherweight division, Lawson McClure versus Josh Blyden. Kind of give us the overview of that one.
That's a rematch, right?
Yeah, it is a rematch from our 2017 Georgia Fighters Fight of the Year. We do an award show each year in this one-hour Fight of the Year. And I think I've made it pretty public that Lawson McClure has always been my favorite fighter to watch. I think some guys get jealous or mad that I say that, but he's one of the most exciting fighters. Ironically, comes from the same gym as Forrest Griffin, who's probably one of my other favorite fighters to watch. And Josh Blyden, you know, kind of a success story. If you don't know much about him, he started out about 250 pounds when he started his journey to cardio kickboxing and jiu-jitsu, and now fights at 145. He's got a record of 6-2. So rematch of a hell of a good fight last year. And, you know, I wanted to put them on one of our normal cards because it was such a good fight and a good ticket seller. But when Bellator called, they kind of said, give us your best four fights, your most exciting fights. And this is definitely at the top of the list I wanted to get on for them. So, I mean, my goal is that these eight guys get looked at by Bellator. And, you know, it's a fantasy to me to think that Lawson McClure or Josh Blyden could move on to Bellator after this. You know, I think that's the goal of our promotion. I'm sure that's the goal of you guys at Valor as well, to, you know, give these guys bigger and better opportunities to move on beyond what we can do for them.
Undoubtedly. Now, just go on down the line here. Three more matchups on the undercard, and they're all really good. Which ones stand out the most to you?
I think Devorius Tubbs versus Joseph Creer, just because Tubbs has fought a lot for us in pro MMA and Muay Thai, and he's a guy that's put in his work locally to deserve a shot on this. He's fought on LFA a couple times. We've brought him in. And then Joseph Creer, you know, from Bad Apple MMA, I've never had him fight on one of our shows. We've tried to get him to. He's always had good fighters from his gym, and he's undefeated at 4-0-1. So I think that's one I'm looking forward to, and Tubbs is 4-1. So I think that's going to be a real good co-main event right there.
I got to agree. That's the one that I'm kind of pegged for, the one I'm most interested in seeing, because you know, those are just, you know, two of the top 185 guys in the Southeast, really. And I would think kind of a dream fight, you know, for you, especially in the Atlanta region, to be able to pull that one off. So I'm excited to see that one. And, you know, Zach Cooper, another guy on the card that we're familiar with. We've had up a couple times and fought for you several times as well. Devontae Sewell, what do you think about that match? That's one where I see, you know, they're both kind of known for that grindy style. You know, you think that'll cancel each other out and we'll get a good stand-up fight?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is neither guy's undefeated or anything like that. I mean, Zach's 4-4, Devontae's 3-2, but they're both just kind of grinders. They're both super nice, courteous guys, and, you know, you just want to see some of these guys win. You know, it should be fun to watch. They're both just grinders. I don't see either one of them finishing in the first round. I think it's going to be the distance. And I think it's going to be a good, exciting fight where they both get amped up in front of a couple thousand people there. And then the other opening fight is Mike Galatello, 1-1 at 145 versus John Vaughn, who's making his pro debut, and he was our 145 amateur champion. So that should be a pretty interesting fight right there. I mean, all eight guys on the card either have a 500 record or above. So that was something we kind of strived to do, is get all guys with winning records, and, you know, we did that.
Awesome. Well, again, tell us how it all gets started. I mean, it's going to be a big weekend. When Monster does it, they do it in grand fashion, you know? So, you know, there are a lot of festivities going on and so forth. Give us a little insight about what's going on there. Of course, the fights start at 4 p.m. on Saturday. But, you know, what are you going to be down there, getting into and so forth leading up to this?
Man, I was going to actually ask you guys for advice for what I should expect going into this kind of deal. Hey, man, tomorrow, what's that?
It's one of those funny things I noticed, man. Like, you know, I'm sure you're the same way, but, you know, essentially we've got a machine that kind of runs itself. So, you know, whenever they came and that, you know, they needed their cage. And so I've got a cage crew that I'm more than confident in their competency to just make it happen without me having to be there watching over their shoulder. But it was kind of one of those things where you just kind of feel, you got the vibe that you just are supposed to be there, you know what I mean? Anyway, so like for me, I'm not used to, you know, being there watching over my guy's shoulder the whole time, but it was one of those things where I felt like it was almost expected. That was that's the only kind of, it's not really advice so much, but just the kind of the vibe I got, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think lots of times we're not only hoping the fighters do well so they impress UFC or Bellator or LFA, but, you know, it's our job as promoters to put our best foot forward when we work with other promotions. You know, I worked with LFA a couple of times. I worked with Legacy. So I've been lucky enough to do a couple of Access TV shows. And I think anytime we partner with someone above us, we do our best to put our best foot forward and impress them that they want to come back and work with us. And I know talking to Bellator, they've said good things about working with you guys over there at Valor, and I'm sure they're come back to you. So I'm just trying to compete and make sure I do the same. And I don't know if you guys know the history of what happened to me in a couple months, but back in December during the holidays, I had both my trailers stolen, which $20,000 in trailers right there, plus my entire cage got stolen, my ring cards, my gloves, my merchandise, you know, anything and everything I had in these two trailers got completely stolen. So I've tried to replace bit after bit. So I finally bought a new trailer just last week. So it's getting outfitted right now. My cage doesn't even arrive till tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. So we're going into this Bellator event, never even setting up our cage before. The ring mat comes in from Bellator tomorrow. You know, tomorrow night I'm going to IKEA to buy a couple of stools for the cage because I just found out today, even though I bought a $12,000 cage, it doesn't even come with two stools. So I got to swing by IKEA to get that tomorrow. You know, just everything from getting red and blue tape. I had to buy new mats. You know, my mats for the dressing rooms, I had probably four pieces 10 feet long of wrestling mats that all got stolen. And I don't know if you guys saw the photo from Bellator in Florida last year at NASCAR where there's like cardboard pieces. Sweet. Yeah, so I wanted to, again, put my best foot forward. So, I was looking at some cheap zebra mats, but I went out and bought all new wrestling mats last week. So I got to go grab those tomorrow, put them in my car. And then we set up 9 a.m. Friday mornings when we start setting up the cage and loading it in. And we don't really even know where to park yet, where to pull the trailer in. So like you said a second ago, Tim, usually I can leave my guys to do the cage as well. But there is definitely a nervous anxiety about Friday morning, starting with setting the cage at 9 a.m., the weigh-ins at 1 p.m. at the hotel near the airport, and then Saturday, I believe they do like some kind of pit party at the Mercedes-Benz Arena from noon till 6, where people can get into that with a Monster Energy and a Ticketmaster ticket to Supercross. And then there's also the pit party next door, the George Ward Congress Center, that goes all day. They're going to do public weigh-ins at 3:30 on the Monster stage, and then start the fights at 4. So I think like you, I try to get everything done a couple of days in advance, and going into tomorrow is like, you know, my last day of prep and getting all my little things done. So.
Well, it's nice to only have to wrangle four fights at the least, you know, and it sounds like you've got a lot of guys on there that you're familiar with and they're reliable. And that's the same thing that I made sure to do as well. You make sure you got guys that are going to be, you know, on time, on weight and have a history of doing such. So, you know, it looks like you've got a card that's put together that, should not give you too many headaches.
Yeah. I guess the worst aspect is if someone misses weight or does whatever, you know, we fall from 4 to 3 or 2. Compared to where you normally fall from 14 fights to 13 fights, you know, not as big an impact. But knock on wood, everything's gone well.
But you don't have to deal with ticket returns. You don't have to deal with all that stuff. You know, it's going to be smooth sailing once you guys settle in there. And of course, with NFC's a great promotion. You guys have always done really good stuff. So I'm very excited to see how everything turns out. And we were talking about this. The arena is sort of an indoor outdoor kind of deal, right? Like it's possible to open the roof up or I guess it's the Mercedes Center.
I'm confused. Is it at the Mercedes Center or is it at the Congress Center or is that the same place?
So they're right next door to each other. Mercedes-Benz Arena is probably 20 feet from the George Ward Congress Center. So you walk out the hall and you walk outside and Mercedes-Benz Arena is right there. We're doing the Supercross. So it's Mercedes-Benz. You can open up the rooftop, which I don't know if they're due this weekend or not. But George Ward Congress Center, where we're doing the fights and the pit party, is completely enclosed. So there's really a roof there that you obviously can't open.
So,
gotcha.
So, well, so Bellator actually said this is a walk in the park compared to what they did with NASCAR with you guys, because that was outside with the elements and everything.
Oh, so, it was hot.
I don't know how you guys did that. I don't think my nerves would be able to take that.
It was so hot. It was oppressively hot, but it was crazy. I mean, because the fighters still deliver. They really, like the amount of people they're going to get to fight in front of is going to be more than they've ever fought in front of. So the energy is ramped up there. But Casey's kid, Preston Chick, fought in the first fight of that Bellator one at Bristol. And after the first round, he and his opponent, as they walked back to their stool, were leaving bloody footprints where their feet were blistering and literally sticking to the hot canvas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was awful. I guess there was a strip of metal as they walked into the cage that was exposed and had been in the heat all day. And, you know, nobody thought about it. And they just walked across it and it instantly cooked the front pads of their feet. And so afterwards, they started to put water on it and take care of it. But it's definitely, and you got your fingers crossed all day, because if they have to cancel due to rain and so forth, that's it. The fight's off.
It's just off. Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be really a bad situation. But all that being said, Dave, real quick, I want to give you the opportunity to give, you know, some final shout outs about this event. Anything that the fans need to know. Of course, it's a free event, so you got to come out there and bring your Monster Energy can. But and at the same time, also give us your social media plugs, all the places we can find and follow NFC.
Yeah, it's Saturday, official weigh-ins at 3:30 on the Monster Stage Saturday, mock weigh-ins, fight start at 4. You get in completely free with a empty can of Monster that you can recycle there. Got 4 fights on the card, all local guys. It's an all-ages show. And it's really the first time we've ever had any kind of big show like this, completely free in Atlanta, and then right afterwards you got the Supercross. So it's just been a sweet adventure for us. You know, we have this Saturday. Next Friday, we have a normal NFC fight at Center Stage. It's selling pretty well. So it's just a cool opportunity for us to do what we can to catch up to you guys at Valor and work with Bellator. So.
Bellator MMA Monster Energy Series goes down this Saturday, March 3rd at 4 p.m. And that resonates from the Georgia World Congress Center. Join Dave Oblas and the whole NFC crew there for a free night of action. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
We are joined by Julius Bowling, 2-0 mixed martial arts fighter out of D3 Elite, who returns to action in mixed martial arts competition at Strikefest 3 as he faces Logan Crowley. Now, that goes down next Saturday night. Julius, how you doing tonight? And thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me, man. I'm doing blessed tonight.
Awesome, man. Great to have you, man. It's the first time having you on the Valor Hour. So to our listeners out there that aren't familiar with you, before we dive into what's coming up, if you don't care to kind of fill everyone in out there, you know, on your background, you know, how you got into fighting and any sort of, you know, other sort of experience you've got in the combat sports world, and, you know, just kind of get everybody up to snuff on Julius Bowling.
Yes, sir. Well, my name is Julius Bowling. I'm from Johnson City, Tennessee, 33 years old. I started doing karate about 5 or 6. And then I, you know, went back to other sports, playing basketball, football, and track. I left karate alone. And then I started with a basketball friend, Dustin Long. We played basketball in college together. I started watching him fighting, and I'm just looked up and was like, hey, I think I can do that. So now it leads to me 2-0 right now in the mixed martial arts, and just seeing where it's going to go now.
Well, of course, last time we saw you in action, it was under Muay Thai rules. And of course, that was at Strikefest 2. But, you know, before that, we saw you at Apex Fights, which is a part of the Valor Fights organization, and D3 Elite Fights, which is sort of the predecessor to Strikefest. You're known primarily as a striker. You're a guy that's dangerous there up on your feet. Which one do you prefer? You know, you kind of give and take a little bit. You got the bigger gloves when it's purely striking. But at the same time, you know, it can go anywhere in mixed martial arts competitions.
That is true. So I'm a striker, and that's just from growing up in the background that I grew up in, that we was taught to fight at a young age. So, and the first thing I learned was to throw these fists. Like, the striking is my number one go-to, but I've been over at the Olsen's Martial Arts Academy working on my ground game, so it can go to the ground, stand up,
I'm more comfortable with standing up, but if it goes to the ground, what I've learned at the Olsons is helped me on the ground tremendously. But my striking is my number one forte. That's what I'm coming to do, is I'm coming to throw these fists and see if you can take them.
You know, I was going to say that actually right before you did. One thing that's always kind of stood out to me about Julius is, you know, he comes from the crew with D3, and those guys are known to be strikers, boxers. But he's gone out there and branched off and made it a point to improve his ground game by going over to Olsen's, which is very commendable. You know, so he's not going to be not saying that D3 is a one-dimensional team at all, but more known for their striking. And, you know, so Julius is becoming more well-rounded in that regard. I've always said, you know, you've got such a long, tall, great frame for this. You know, you make 170 pretty easy. This one is going to be a 165. Are there any plans for you to go on down to 155, where I think you'd have some real
That's what my plan is. I want to stay at 170 at an amateur level, but I'm thinking that when I turn, if I do, you know, if I'm healthy enough to continue to enjoy this sport, I want to go down to 155 and see what that's like. I walk around at 175, so dropping 5 pounds to fight at 170, 10 pounds to 165, you know, it's nothing but sitting in the sauna for a few hours, especially with my body frame. So 155 is what is my goal within the next 6 to 9 months.
So, well, we've got you know, the fight coming up next week. This will be your first main event. So I know you got to be excited about that. Be fighting in your hometown against Logan Crowley. And that's a guy that not many of us know much about. He hasn't competed yet coming out of Oneida. I have met the guy, actually, because he was supposed to compete on the Kentucky show that was canceled. And so he is, you know, from meeting him, you can tell he's a strong guy. He's, you know, kind of a country boy, but you can tell he's a stout guy. And, you know, I think he is going to come to fight. You know, what can we expect to see from you in this fight? Any new wrinkles, or are you going to go out there and just kind of throw those fists like you've been doing?
Yeah, pretty much. I stick to the game plan. I come out, and my first thing is I'm going to come out and try to touch him with my jab, you know, and then try to throw that cross just to see where he's at. And if he opens up a little bit, you know, I might throw some knees or some kicks. But, yeah, I'm super excited. Dustin Long called me and was like, hey, change your plans. You're the, like, main event. And then my first reaction was like, you know, oh my gosh, really? And then I sit back and thought about it. I'm like, you know what? This is my hometown. Carver Park is where I'm born and raised. I mean, it's a dream come true to, you know, perform in front of my family and my friends. So I just can't wait. We're almost a week away, and I'm just ready to go.
Undoubtedly. Well, Julius, real quick, you've kind of already given a few shout outs there, but I'm going to give you the chance to do it formally. You know, all your friends and teammates, everyone that's helped you along the way, I'm going to give you the chance to give those shout outs. Also, you've got to give us your social media plugs, everywhere we can find and follow you, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth.
Sounds good. I want to shout out first to D3 Elite. Dustin Long is, you know, the number one guy that got me into this. So he's my first guy I want to shout out. And then I want to shout out everybody at the Olsen's Martial Arts, Keith Olsen over there, and just all my teammates at D3 Elite and the Olsen's, man. And then my family, my son is my motivator there, just watching him. He likes me training. He comes to the gym and watches me train. So that's my number one fan right there, my little son. He just turned 2. So he'll be at the fights. And then you can find me on Facebook. It's just my name, Julius Bowling. And then on Instagram, it's Juju_423 on Instagram. And I don't got a Twitter. So I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Juju_423 on Instagram.
Just under a week or over a week away until Julius Bowling returns to action. And that will be at Strikefest 3, May 10th. At Carver Recreation Center. Be sure to get your tickets now and support Julius Bowling and his efforts. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me, man. It's been a pleasure, and I can't wait to see you guys and put on a show for you guys, man.
We are joined by undefeated mixed martial artist Caleb Miller, representing the renowned KMAA Fight Camp, and he prepares to face Bud Cook next week at Strikefest 3. That's March 10th. Caleb, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, man. Your first time on the Valor Hour. And so before we get into what's coming up, if you would fill our listeners in that aren't familiar with you on your background, you know, any sort of training you've had previously and up till now.
Yeah, so I've trained for a little over a year and a half now. I've had one amateur fight, which I competed in June of last year. I won by decision. I don't have any, I don't have any previous wrestling background, any boxing, any martial arts besides what I've done the past year and a half. So, I feel pretty good with where I'm at for the amount of time that I've trained.
Well, Caleb, talk a little bit about your training. Of course, Ovin St. Preux, we all know him. He's the kind of the cornerstone there at KMAA. But you've got a laundry list of tough, tough guys there. Nick Gertz. For the females, you've got Shamir Peshewa and Christina Ricker. You know, just really a good group of guys. Jason King, you can't leave him out. Talk about your training there. Who are primarily your main training partners? And, you know, what are you doing to get ready for this?
My main training partners, Nick Gertz. He's obviously a really tough fighter, really experienced. I'm really blessed to be able to train with him every day. He's kind of taken me under his wing, helped me out quite a bit. Also Dre Miley. He's also one of the pro fighters there. He's helped me a lot on striking, a lot with my footwork. Really good. He actually teaches classes there as well. He's a really good guy, a really good teacher. As far as my strength and conditioning, Shamir Peshewa, she takes care of my strength and conditioning.
Caleb, I got to cut in here. This is Alan Poole. What's up, man?
What's up, Alan? How are you?
Yeah, doing okay. I'm sorry, I had to cut in here. So can I just let this out here about the last time I was in there doing a photo shoot with Shamir and how brutal she was to you. And like you want to talk about reverse discrimination. Remember, she made you take your shirt off, take your shirt for the picture.
Maybe.
I want to know what you think about that. And if we should apply the same thing treatment to the females.
She pushes me really hard. the last time we had a photo shoot, that was right after I had surgery. I had surgery on my shoulder late September of last year. So body-wise, I wasn't in that great of shape. But she's definitely pushed me very hard to get ready for this fight. And I'm in much better shape now.
We know the last time we saw you was in June at the Maryville show at the Shed, which is our first show there. Really cool venue. We'll be back there actually in April. And you were in the fight of the night, man. I remember that was the best fight. You fought a guy from Killer Bees in Cleveland and got the win in a real good, tough test for your debut. Talk a little bit about that. And will we see any you know, changes or any wrinkles here in the, you know, it'll be not quite a year, but a good, you know, a good amount of time since the last time you fought. And you know, you're coming up here next weekend against Bud Cook.
Yeah. So Anthony Bryant was the guy that I fought last year. Really tough guy. For the amount of time I think that we had both trained, he was definitely a good matchup for a debut. I think moving forward, in this next fight, I'll be much more rounded. I think I'll be a lot calmer, more relaxed inside the cage. Too much has changed. My style has changed a little bit, but I can't let out all my secrets.
Well,
you know?
I was going to say this. You said you're going to be more well-rounded inside the cage now. I've got to point out again that Strikefest 3 is in a ring, and you remember that, right? So, you know, just out of curiosity, have you been kind of preparing? Because it's going to be a little bit different. The the environment's going to be different. No cage walking back up the cage, that sort of thing. It's going to be old school pride rules where they grab your legs and pull you back in if you're about to fall out. Have you taken any of that into consideration and adjusted your training for that?
I have. This week, actually, I got to go and check out a boxing ring. I've actually never been inside a boxing ring before, so it was definitely a different experience. It's a much different surface. You can definitely tell that it's made for striking. It's not really made for takedowns or groundwork. But I think I'll be fine either way. I'm pretty good at making things happen on the fly, so we'll see what happens.
Undoubtedly. Real quick, Caleb, go ahead and give your shout outs where they're due. All your teammates, your friends, your family, everyone that supported you in your cause in this mixed martial arts journey, as well as all your social media plugs, all the places that we can find you and follow you. We're talking about Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and so forth.
I don't have a Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram at Caleb_Miller, just my name. Same thing on Facebook, Caleb Miller. Shout out to my teammates at KMAA, my coach Eric Turner, Joey Zonar, Shamir Peshewa. Shout out to my parents. My parents have been so supportive of my decision in the past couple of years, and I really couldn't be more blessed to have them in my corner as well.
Caleb Miller returns to action inside the ring. That comes down March 10th at Strikefest 3. Be sure to get your tickets now and come out and support Caleb in his efforts. Caleb, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
We are joined by Dustin Long, pro MMA fighter, boxer, and promoter of the Strikefest event series. Strikefest returns to the Carver Recreation Center next Saturday night, March 10th, with its third installment, and it's going to be great. Dustin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, my man. We've got the third Strikefest coming up here just over a week, as Casey said, on March the 10th. Do you think we'd be on to a third win at this point, or did you just sit in for the long haul when we started this thing?
I'm glad that it's the third one. That's it's helping get more fights to local fighters or whatever. And that's just really what I'm trying to do, give them a chance to show everybody what they've been working on. They work 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and then they want to fight at home in front of people they grew up with and they know, so it gives them a chance to do that. But I'm excited about it, though.
Let's talk a little bit about the main lineup here, the top three fights. Julius Bowling headlines against Logan Crowley. And, of course, Julius, we spoke with him a little bit earlier, man, and he's the epitome of D3 Elite, man. He's been with you since the beginning. And so he's going to be headlining. But you also got a big heavyweight matchup in the co-main event, and then some smaller guys, from respective teams. One of my guys, and Cecil West from the Adversity Training Center, which is a great team there under Ian Lawler. Talk about the lineup here, the main card, and what you're looking forward to the most.
Looking forward to all of them. I'm just getting to watch the fights instead of fighting on the court, so I actually get to watch and enjoy the fights and see the progression of the fighters and what they fix from their last mistakes, from their last fights, and all that. Drew, he's super duper athletic. He's just a really athletic guy, and has been busting his butt. I haven't been doing the same. Gary, they've all been working hard. It's a bunch of exciting fights. I'm excited to work on them.
So, talk a little bit about, the last event. Your guys had a good night for the most part. I think you guys won all your fights but one, if I can recall. And a lot of those guys are going to be turning around and fighting again, like Julius will be fighting again. Aaron Phillips coming off a win, a much needed win. Now he'll be turning around again. Talk a little bit about some of those guys that fought last time and what you thought about their performances, in almost a clean sweep for you guys.
Well, Aaron, he I think he got right on his guy earlier. I'm excited to see Aaron's fight. He looks like he's in kind of tough, so he's been working on a lot, staying calm. Aaron just gets real wound up, you know, super, super excited. And I think that's played into a couple of his losses, just getting so excited, making mistakes, meeting Colton, submissions and stuff like that. Jew, I was happy that he went to the second round. I think that's the first time he's went to the second round. He was came to the corner. He was like, man, I'm dog tired. You know, he's a little bit more tired than you, but I was excited that he got to go some rounds and actually see what it's like, you know, when that fatigue sits in. It's easy to win a fight when you're winning from start to finish. But, you know, that's what amateur's all about, growing and seeing how you actually react when you're in tough situations and stuff like that. Gary's fight, that should be an interesting fight. Him and his opponent, they had a problem with the headgear last time, so his opponent called for a rematch, said he would have won the fight if it wasn't for the headgear. He actually caught Gary with a good shot early, so I'm excited about that one.
For this one, you're taking it back to the Pride days. And of course, remember, you know, we in the Strikefest 1, we got a little bit of that. You know, we're talking about the ring. We're using the ring this time. Last time, we were in the big 30-foot cage. We're back to the ring again. And that's sort of a wild card there. It's a little bit different. If fighters are not used to fighting in it, particularly MMA competitors, it can get a little bit of, you know, there'd be a little crazy there. And it's a lot of fun for the fans to watch. Talk about that contrast. When you bring the ring into the mix?
Well, the ring is just, in my opinion, it makes for more of a stand-up. Right? It's harder to pressure into it. Well, there's no cage for you to pressure into. You know, if you get too much pressure on the ropes, you go in between them, the ref will stop the action. So it's I'd say it's more of a striker-friendly, you know, when you put MMA inside of a ring than a cage. But it's got its ups and downs, I guess. It makes it a totally different fight, if you ask me, though. You know, like I said, with the cage, you can throw a combination, put them up against the cage. You got a lot of stuff that you can use to your advantage or disadvantage when you're inside of a cage that ain't going to be there for in a ring. And it's easier to cut your opponent off in a ring because you got the four corners instead of a cage, or like Tim's huge cage, it's a complete circle. Yeah. So you really, you don't have a corner to cut off, you know, but if somebody knows their angles and good footwork, it's pretty easy to cut somebody off in the ring, so you can shorten up the area that they have to move in, and it's just...
I think it even makes it almost more jujitsu friendly. And I'll say the reason I say that is when you're in a cage, you know, if you get taken down, you can scoot up against that cage and climb up, you know, but if you scoot up against the ropes and start to go under, they're going to drag you back in the center. So you actually have to use your jujitsu. So you're going to see a more traditional style the way you did back in the Pride days. So I think it definitely contrasts and it changes the game a lot. So yeah, very, very interested.
I'd say it probably eliminates more wrestling than anything, I would guess. I guess it'd take out a lot of the wrestling then. Like you said, I didn't even think of it like that because, you know, jujitsu in the cage, you can get up against the cage, stuff like that. But you're going to be standing until you get to the ground, once you get to the ground. So BJJ from there. So I'd probably say it eliminates more of the wrestling.
Yeah.
You're either flat on your back or on your feet, you know.
Yeah, unless you're just a superior that can hit a blast double in open space, for sure. It's it takes away from the wrestlers, for sure.
Let me ask you this. I don't know, Tim, you may be able to answer this, but I don't know if you ever watched Crazy Horse, Charles Bennett, back in the day. He was originally Pride. You know, he'd post his hands on the corner, and he would almost like he was going to jump up and sit on the corner, you know? But he would just post himself up, and he would do like a double thrust kick out. Can you do stuff like that? I mean, is that stuff legal?
I don't see why not. I don't know. I'd have to, like, read the rules hardcore, but I don't think there would be anything in the rules that would say that you can't post off of the arena, if you will.
If he's not holding it.
As long as you're not holding it, you're just kind of like pushing off of it.
Right. Hey. So what you're saying is anything short of submit,
maybe you should get somebody to try it. Yeah. Might try to get one of the guys to try it next Saturday.
Well, cool. Justin, real quick, I just want to give you an opportunity to kind of give shout outs where they're due, you know, show some love where it's needed. And then also all of your social media plugs where we can find and follow Strikefest and Strikefest 3.
And any fights you may, anything, any fight news you may have that you want to talk about.
Well, I'd like to give shout outs to Tim for helping me put everything together. Team Ox for showing support the show. Olsen's Martial Arts Academy, every gym this involves KMAA, the sponsors, Power Siders, just everybody who's helped with the show, the fighters for coming in there every day, 4 or 5 hours, busting their butt. You know, it wouldn't be a show without the fighters. Just everybody who's going to be a part of it. And we may be coming up next month thinking about doing something new. I was going to get your opinion on it, Casey. Maybe doing Sunday night fights, boxing, pro boxing next month.
Okay.
About it.
Thinking about doing something like that.
I got you. Well,
fights, say what?
No, keep going.
And as far as future fights, I'm looking to get back into the Valor Cage, hopefully, Mr. Louis, up there at UVA Wise, whenever Ben and my boy, oh my gosh, I get hit
Chandler.
By. Huh? Chandler, yeah.
Chandler,
I forgot his name. Ben and Chandler, that's going to be a little fight right there. Hopefully, I get back into the cage there. I was supposed to fight March 31st, but it fell through. And then I was supposed to fight a couple weeks ago. I was supposed to box a couple weeks ago, and it fell through. But, yeah, we're looking into getting some Sunday night fights and doing it maybe once a month, once every 2 months, having a smaller card, all pro. I see a lot of MMA guys converting over to boxing, whether it's just, you know, some of them's doing it just to work on their MMA game, or some are doing it for a check, or some are just, you know, actually wanting to make a career out of it. But, you know, I figured with all the guys around here willing to take a boxing match, we might as well have a platform to do it on. So I was thinking about doing it maybe once a month, having a Sunday night fight.
Yeah, pro boxing definitely. I think a lot of times for an MMA fighter, it sort of takes the pressure off. You know, like, you know, you can go and have. I mean, obviously, you don't want to ever lose, but you know, MMA fighters, they kind of carry their pride on their MMA record. So you can kind of go in and, you know, and you can get that extra experience. I know Luis Pena is a perfect example of that. I think he's 0-2 in pro boxing, but he fought like ESPN level guys both times, and it elevated his career in a lot of ways. You know, just getting that experience. So it's definitely a good effort. So you have to keep us informed.
Yeah, it makes you just more comfortable and stand up and not to downplay boxing at all, because there's some boxers around here that'll clean your clock. I mean, it's just boxing's still a dangerous sport, but you know, sometimes you it feels good to know that you're not going to catch an elbow or a knee or something. And like you said, people's just want to, you know, if it was up to me, I'd do a Muay Thai fight one day, box the next, do a grappling tournament the next, because it's all tightening up your MMA game. You know, I'm more concerned about MMA than anything else, so why not take something else or take another fight, make some money, and improve in one of the aspects of fighting. So,
yeah, most definitely.
We'll see how that goes.
Give us those social media plugs. Where do we find you? I know Facebook. I follow you on Facebook for Strikefest, but where else can we follow what's going on with Strikefest? Can we watch the fights? Are you going to stream them even like through Facebook, anything like that? Can we watch the fights anywhere?
It'll be streamed live through my page on Facebook, Dustin Long. It'll be streamed live on the Strikefest 3 page. Any other links, I'll have to get back with you here in a couple of days. I don't know yet. We're still working on that. We ain't not UFC yet, so we're still working. But any way that we can get it up, we will have it streamed live for sure. And I don't know if there'll be any other link, but it will be streamed live.
All right. Strikefest 3 returns to Carver Recreation Center next Saturday night. That's March 10th with its third installment. It's going to be awesome. Dustin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all for having me.
That's it for a tremendous lineup of interviews, which means we are down to the final stretch. It's Valor Hour main event time as we bring on our esteemed discussion panel, Alan Poole, Mark Laws, Sawyer Rich, and Jeff Hobbs. And we delve into a major point of a discussion in combat sports news. Tragedy struck the not Tragedy struck the Knoxville boxing scene last Saturday night as WBIR Channel 10 News reported that UT student Tanner Ray collapsed between rounds in a boxing match hosted as part of the annual Ace Miller Memorial Boxing Tournament. That's a fundraiser event which features representatives of UT-based fraternities. Ray was immediately transported to the University of Tennessee Medical Center, where he passed away. The second day of competition was canceled in the wake of this horrible tragedy, but the magnitude of the incident reverberates throughout the University of Tennessee and the combat sports world as a whole. Gentlemen, we are all very aware of the recent proposals to the Tennessee State Athletic Commission to rescind the requirement of an ambulance at all amateur boxing events like this one. Citing that boxing is a safer alternative to mixed martial arts. It complements our communities by keeping kids off the streets. And, that most promoters simply cannot afford the additional $200 to $300 in costs for the ambulance. This change was never approved and put into action, something I'm very thankful for. And I don't dispute any of the things that boxing brings to the table. I think it's a great deal. But guys, let's first touch base on the landscape of amateur boxing, which is controlled entirely by the USA Boxing sanctioning body, and then kind of go from there. Tim, I'm going to let you talk first.
Well, actually, I know that Sawyer has to get to work here real soon, so I'm going to throw it to Sawyer actually to open. And I know, Sawyer, you've got a few amateur boxing fights under your belt, don't you?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So from your experience, you know, are those the type of events, did you feel like that they're that much safer than MMA or kickboxing, to where they any sort of appeal to have lesser medical requirements would be okay?
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, the boxing in general, it forces you to take more accumulation, you know, in blows to the face, your body or whatever. Whereas MMA, you know, you can, of course, you can clinch and get the trip or whatever, and we start grappling at that point. So I don't know that it's necessarily safer at all. I just as far as being safer than kickboxing, probably. I mean, but either way, both of those sports are just stand up combat sports, obviously. So they're going to force you to take more shots. So I'm going to have to disagree and say that is they're definitely not safer than MMA, and that is a myth and a misconception.
Guys, we were, I think pretty much everybody on the panel, aside from maybe Sawyer and Alan, we've either attended or viewed a majority of these State Athletic Commission meetings, and there have been several incidents and, you know, occasions in which representatives of regional boxing events and promotions, particularly amateur events, have come to speak and have really essentially requested that the commission allow them to rescind the requirements of an ambulance on site. Now, they would still have the EMS present, but the ambulance wouldn't be present. Of course, that would have been catastrophic on Saturday or Friday night had it not happened. I mean, it was still catastrophic, but it was certainly needed. It's something that you definitely need to take a look at, because we all know that mixed martial arts is dangerous.
Yeah, that argument, I'm sorry, that argument isn't just squashed. You know, as of the last meeting, they were taking it under advisement, essentially, to look at potentially still moving that direction for amateur boxing. It isn't like it was just squashed. That was still, you know, there is an actual sitting commission member that's fighting for that.
What do you think? How do you feel about that? I mean, obviously you're a fight promoter, MMA promoter, but you also host striking based fighting events and so forth as well. You've been part of the Strike Fest, which hosts professional boxing. What do you think about, you know, that landscape, and where do you think that's coming from?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think it comes down to the fact that they're wanting to keep their overhead as low as possible, and getting an ambulance to come sit at your place is not cheap. You know, you're looking at upwards of some places are going to charge you, you know, $150, $200 an hour to have that ambulance sit there. But, you know, it's just one of those necessary evils. And when you don't need it till you fucking need it, you know, and then when you need it and you don't have it, then what, you know? And I think it just makes, I think honestly, just I toying around and saying, you know, this sport does need it, this sport doesn't need it, I think that's insane to me. You know, ultimately, I think they have a harder time selling amateur boxing when it comes to just selling tickets to Joe Public. And so they're looking to keep their overhead down as much as they can.
Mark, you're in the medical field, you know, Top Cut Man and so forth. Talk about what you think about the situation, how you feel as far as how, you know, should the boxing community, you know, have the requirement that they have the ambulance? Also, what do you think of the fraternity boxing top lineup, which, you know, some may say is essentially kind of like a tough man contest where a lot of these fighters are sort of representing a fraternity. They're not necessarily formally trained fighters. Some may attend the boxing training. I don't know specifically, so I'm not going to make that comment. But what do you think on both of those topics? On your part,
it's absolutely a tough man contest. I mean, you're calling guys out of fraternity houses that have no formal training, with no formal medical supervision. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster, man. You're asking guys to come out of fraternity houses. Now, I can speak to this as a healthcare provider and as a fraternity member. I can't tell you one of my fraternity members that I would have ever recommended to ever go out there and box. The fact that, yes, MMA is more dangerous than boxing, but shit, isn't all of it, man? The fact they don't have an ambulance thing by, I spend the majority of my time lining up healthcare professionals as doctors and as EMTs to attend our events. And for them to not be present for amateur boxing is absolutely silly, man. It absolutely, someone can die. And that, listen, anytime you're putting punches in someone's face, you need that extra layer of security there. You know, it's the fact they didn't have it is the same reason that we attended the Tennessee Athletic Commission meeting.
Alan, you live there in the Knoxville region. You photographed a lot of the regional boxers and so forth. This is a big event. This happens every year, the Ace Miller Memorial. Before it was a memorial, when Ace Miller was still alive, he was a major part of bringing the fraternity battles, and it's a big fundraiser. What do you think about this situation? Obviously, it's a tragedy, but what is your take?
Yeah, man, obviously it's a tragedy, and I don't know what all went into the death. You know, I don't know what all the circumstances are that went into it, but I feel terrible for the family and the friends and all that stuff, of course. But I mean, I've been to that exact event before, and it's not, I mean, you have to have an ambulance there. I mean, it's not like we're playing soccer and we're trying, maybe somebody twists an ankle or maybe somebody will get hurt, so we need to have medical staff there. The job of these amateur boxers is to hurt the other person. So you know somebody's fucking getting hurt. So we got to take care of them. You know, they got to have an ambulance, just as far as that goes.
You know what? Just to I just literally right now logged on to the Tennessee Athletic Commission's website here and am on their calendar of events page, where everyone goes that has to get to, you know, if you get an event permit, your event gets listed on their calendar. So, you know, I look at last week, which would have been the weekend of the 22, 23, 24, and all there is an amateur kickboxing event in Nashville and an amateur MMA event in Memphis. So these, you know, this event wasn't even ran through the Athletic Commission at all. And I see on here that there is amateur boxing through USA Boxing listed for other cities. So it's not like they're exempt from that. So that's another kind of red flag, I would think. So was USA Boxing wasn't even a part of this potentially?
I would assume it could be that USA Boxing was. I would assume, because of the history, I believe it's Ace Miller's daughter. I'm sure that because they, you know, Ace Miller at one point, I believe, was the director of USA Boxing.
100%.
I'm undoubtedly sure that USA Boxing was involved, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's just like if we were to hold a mixed martial arts event and contact UMAF about it, UMAF may still, you know, operate and work without the letter from the commission, USA Boxing, I'm not saying they would, but I'm saying they could, and that could be what happened here with USA Boxing. That, you know, this event may have gone on for so many years, and they just didn't think to schedule it the way that it's, you know, things are required in the current state of the Tennessee Athletic Commission. And that would be what I assume is happening. And if that's happening, it could be that a lot of amateur boxing events are going that route. And if that's the case, then, you know, then really the Tennessee Commission really doesn't have their hands on it at all. Let's go over to Jeff, man. You live there in Nashville, right there with the Tennessee Athletic Commission. Talk a little bit about this occurrence and talk about what, you know, how you know, your thoughts on amateur boxing and USA Boxing as a whole.
You know, I really don't have anything to say about, you know, amateur boxing, USA Boxing. I think, you know, for me, like we've talked time and time again, it's inconsistencies that we're seeing time and time again. Why is one event required to do this? Why is one event, you know, doing everything by the letter of the law that we're supposed to, paying these fees, getting all the proper medical personnel there, and then the next guy doesn't. This is a tragedy. It's something that, I mean, I really don't even want to talk about because it's sad. It really is. You know, someone lost a life. Someone lost a loved one. You know, to me, it's whoever put this event on, it's criminal. It's criminal that you had an event and did not take the proper look. I pay every month. I send money to Geico. Okay. I never leave my house and plan on having a wreck. I never, you know what I'm saying? If that makes any sense, I send them money every month for what might happen, what could happen. It's the law. I'm covering myself, and a lot of money goes wasted every time I step outside this door and don't have a wreck, but you gotta have it. You gotta be prepared for the worst case scenario. And I just think it's criminal that somebody got away with putting on an event and not doing what they should have done. You know, they did this young man and every other fighter that didn't get hurt. They did them all an injustice by not having the proper medical personnel there. It's really, you know, all I've got to say about it.
Tough Man was made illegal almost more than a decade ago, right? I believe 2007, 2008, around the time that mixed martial arts was actually enacted here in the state. And I remember one major component. I attended many Tough Mans way back in the day, and was kind of, you know, back there. I saw what was going on in locker rooms. I'm going to tell you about 75 or 80% of those competitors were drunk as all get out. You know, they were trashed, and you know, that's just the alcohol I could smell. Who knows what else they were on. And that's a dangerous situation. Now, obviously now with the Athletic Commission, I mean, they're very, very strict. And so once you start to wrap your hands and so forth, they're going to be right there with you. They won't even allow Gatorade in the locker room. With USA Boxing, it's a little bit different. It's just like with all amateur sanctioning, the state is not there and they're not present. And, you know, and while this is amateur boxing, it's USA Boxing, how, you know, you have to inquire how closely are these competitors being watched to make sure they're not consuming certain types of stimulants or depressants or both. You know, Tim, do you have any thoughts on that?
If you've ever been, I've been to this event. I don't know if any of you if you guys have, but it is a 3-day party and it is wild. And I wish I could put this many people in a show. It's 2,000 people 3 days in a row, and they are getting down. So it is very conceivable, you know, to think that there's boxers going in there, you know, potentially inebriated.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's something where I don't know when the next commission meeting is. I think it's something where it definitely needs to be brought to the attention. Just overall, you know, it's something you know, MMA has no shortage of regulation in this state, and rightly so. I mean, it's, again, a dangerous sport, and we want to do things the right way. And I think that everyone involved has done that. Whether it be by their own choice or by, you know, simply because they have no choice. I think it's enacted that way. You know, USA Boxing has kind of had a stronghold on, you know, because of their ties with the Olympics and so forth. They've had a stronghold on regulation here for many years, you know, maybe, you know, 20, 30 years. I don't know exactly how long. As long as I've been involved in combat sports, USA Boxing has been there. So it's something, not to say that they're not, you know, a righteous organization, but you know, there are so many different factions when it starts to break down. And so if the commissions aren't overseeing it, I think that there could be problems there. And so I think it definitely needs to be brought to their attention. We're sort of doing that now. Real quick to our panel, I want to give you opportunity to kind of sound off, you know, do a quick scrum. Any other thoughts that come to mind? I'm talking to all of you, Alan, Mark, Sawyer, Jeff, and Tim. Any other any closing thoughts on this topic?
Travesty, man.
I said what I was going to say. I'm just really sad, but I hate that it happened in Knoxville, man. I hate that it happened here, and man, it's just a terrible thing that happened.
Yeah. Undoubtedly. Well, that being said, that does it for this week's Valor Hour main event, as well as another episode of the Valor Hour. Remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher, and please share this broadcast. We return here right here next week as we continue our discussion on the biggest combat sports news from across the globe. A huge thanks to our great lineup of guests this week, as well as a huge shout out to Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl for their tremendous support. For myself, Casey Oxendine, and Valor Fights President Tim Loy, this has been the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
My two biggest takeaways were the drawing power of Mike Perry in Orlando. No question, if Mike Perry's not on that fight card, I don't know how well they do at the gate. I know the gate was over $1 million, but the crowd loved Mike Perry. I don't know if on the TV copy, if they showed his introduction walking in, but he got a huge ovation walking into the Amway Center there. And my other one is something that, you know, we've talked a lot about on this show, and it gets talked a lot about on social media, and that is the pace of a UFC show. And, you know, and for a long time, I've always thought that the UFC does a really good job of, you know, putting together, you know, a in-arena product to kind of keep the fans in tune the fights. But on Saturday night, when the fights weren't going on, Daniel, man, it was like they had a DJ playing, and I would call a very low level. When the fights weren't going on, everyone's on their phones, everyone's kind of walking around, you know, conversating, not much going on.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.